Hi, folks, and welcome to the Empowering Dietitians podcast, where each week I explore a different topic to help you feel more confident and connected to your work as a dietitian. I'm your host, Jess Romola, a registered dietitian, dietitian supervisor, and owner of Empowering Dietitians, where I help burnt out and unhappy dietitians opt out of hustle culture and reclaim their passion and purpose as a human first and dietitian second. After all, we are all more than dietitians. April showers bring the last month of the Special Empowering Dietitians Maternity Leave podcast series, where I re-air the top episodes of each season of the show for the first 4 months of the year. Today, we have finally reached the most recent season, season 4, and we're kicking it off with a throwback to episode 119, originally titled, Let's Talk About Money Scarcity as Dietitians. This one, it's so good. Do I say that about all of them? Am I like the most biased person ever? I was listening back to it and really appreciated hearing the messages within it for my own mindset reminders. The reality is that many dietitians feel scarce around money, and I don't hear this issue addressed often enough in a way that really sits well with me. As dietitians feel underpaid, the dominant narrative is often, well, here's how to make more money. Here's how to advocate better. Here's how to pivot to boost your income. But what about conversations around where is all of this scarcity coming from in the first place? Why am I pursuing more money in the first place? What does money represent for me? What do I believe more money will allow me to have or do or feel? Is financial success a core value of mine, or was I taught to value it by the world around me? And how the heck can I prioritize the things that are important to me while also living within a society that requires money for, well, basically everything? I don't really have any edits for this one, only an observation that you can see the thread that this topic wove throughout many of my episodes in 2023. Because while this episode aired in January, our economic situation on both small and large scales continued to be stressful through the entire year. If you've been feeling the pressure as well, you are not alone. And I hope the perspectives in this episode are validating and supportive for you as we embark on the second quarter of a new year. What is your relationship with money? I'm going to give you a moment to ponder that. Really pause if you need or want to. What emotions do you associate with the topic of money? How are you feeling right now in this moment, knowing that's what we're going to be talking about in this episode? Really take some time to sit with and get curious about what's coming up for you. I don't know how often we step back and reflect on this. Situations involving money can bring up really strong emotions in us, but how often are we consciously aware of what's happening and what's influencing it? This is an important step. We have to know where we're starting. I know for me, I honestly have a pretty scarce relationship with money that I've been getting curious about over the past few years in particular, because I'm not against spending money. I'll spend a lot of money on something if I believe in it, if the purchase feels aligned, right? Our money decisions are often based on feeling, and if I feel confident. But when I think about money in general, it's absolutely coming from a space of not enoughness. I've been using that word a lot in my podcast lately. I don't know if it's a word, enoughness, but we're going with it. Now, it's here early on that I want to draw a very firm distinction between actual not enoughness and perceived not enoughness. And we will be digging into this a little bit more in the episode. And while I say firm, it's not really a black and white situation. This is not a situation of absolutes. It's not like you either are financially secure or you're not. And I also don't get to pass judgment on anyone else's financial situation. It doesn't matter how similar it is to mine, it isn't mine.
and no one else's situation is identical to yours. So I am in no way making light of the very real impact that money has on our lives. I want to make that very clear. In fact, that statement at its core is where a lot, if not all of our money scarcity comes from. It comes from capitalism. See, under capitalism, money is an absolute necessity because we need money to provide the very basics for ourselves and sometimes our families. Money isn't just a luxury statement, it's life or death. We know that a lot of the social issues that we face in our society are rooted in the fact that many people do not have access to basic necessities. Food, shelter, healthcare, transportation, clothing, etc. And because these necessities aren't guaranteed, money becomes perhaps the most basic necessity of them all. Money becomes primal, in a sense, because it is necessary for our survival. It gets more complex, though. This isn't just a conversation of money is necessary, and so therefore we need it / want it. And to be clear, I'm not a financial expert. Like, big disclaimer, I know, big surprise. I haven't studied this by any means, so do take my perspective on this with a nice grain of salt. But it has been what I've noticed and observed from what I've learned either peripherally or directly about society, economics, social justice issues, and politics, right? So to be clear, this is a very complex topic. And the first wrinkle in all of this is that capitalism isn't rooted in a sense of enoughness. It isn't satisfied with meeting basic needs. Capitalism is rooted in scarcity and compulsion to achieve, climb, and excel. That means that even if you do have your basic needs met, we are hardwired to not be satisfied with that. It feels like there is always more to have. But see, if that were it, if we were constantly feeling that urge to have more, that we weren't enough or didn't have enough as we are right now in this moment, that would actually likely make spending money easier. And we do see this to some extent in dietitians. We do tend to spend a lot of money to appease our insecurities in our work. We collect all of the continuing ed and trainings to try to be better clinicians, in part because we feel like we aren't enough as we are. That's imposter feelings. We also are more likely to spend money on something that promises us more money in the long run. The math to us adds up, which is why we get so many business coaches talking about their or their clients' five-figure launches or six- or seven-figure years. It's why we shell out tens of thousands of dollars for coaches who say that they can help us achieve the same. In short, it's easier for us to justify an investment or spending our money, even if we don't feel super abundant with our money, if it helps appease a different anxiety in us, the promise that we will finally feel like we are enough once we have this certification, once we reach this financial marker in our business, once we land that dream job, etc. Because of this drive, there are plenty of situations where dietitians actually freely spend money, but it's out of scarcity rather than abundance. Having a scarce relationship with money doesn't mean that we never spend or invest. I think that sometimes the feeling that we're like misers, like holding on to all of the money that we have because we're scarce around it, but that's not always the case. Scarcity in our money relationship is more about what's driving that urge to spend or invest. Again, it's less about what we do with our money and more about why we are doing it. So this not enoughness, that can drive us to invest in things that promise us more, better, richer, more secure futures. But that's not the only wrinkle in all of this. It's not the only layer that we have to peel back. Because years ago, as a new dietitian, I may have argued that dietitians actually do have enough, that this scarcity is purely manufactured by a system that wants us to feel insecure and inadequate, the same way that diet culture does, right? Diet culture wants us to feel like we aren't inherently enough as we are, so we compulsively spend more and more and more on products and services promising us that elusive enoughness. Capitalism, aka hustle culture, it's no different. Mostly because diet culture is hustle culture and is deeply entrenched in capitalism and capitalist ideals. But with capitalism, it doesn't benefit from complacency, right? That's why it's rooted in that compulsion to achieve and excel. We aren't good enough where we are as we are. We have to improve, grow, evolve, better ourselves, get that promotion, move up in the world, climb the ladder. And for a long time, I felt like for dietetics as a profession, that was largely an illusion. It was a perception, because it felt like even though dietitians are definitely not paid what we are worth, we are absolutely an underpaid profession. I felt like by and large, we had enough. We made enough to have our basic needs met. Standing here in 2023, I'm singing a slightly different tune. I'm not going to say I adamantly no longer believe that, which you'll see when we start getting into our values, but like, I also no longer really believe that. In part, I think I was blinded by my privilege, because as a dietitian with a decent paying job, no student loans, no systemic or generational wealth, like setbacks, so to speak, I could generally afford what I needed to starting out. I wasn't rolling in money, but I was comfortable. I was able to save. I could take myself on vacation, live independently, even put myself through culinary school. And the older I got, the more I realized that I am perhaps one of the luckier dietitians, even a field that is by and large tremendously privileged, because some of my colleagues were paying $1,000 a month on student loans. Some of my colleagues were supporting other family members. That paycheck that I was getting that felt like enough, despite not allowing me the luxury of, like, you know, I wasn't a homeowner. I wasn't buying lavish things. I, again, for sure wasn't like rolling in money by any means. The paycheck that felt adequate for my basic necessities, it doesn't stretch as far for everyone. And it was really easy to be blinded to that when my own personal experience was fairly cushy. There were two things that happened that made me realize the faults in that perception, or maybe it's better to say the limitations of that lived experience. The first was that I actually started learning about social justice issues and privilege and the lived experiences of others, and realized how much privilege I took for granted. But to be honest, and I say this with zero pride and full vulnerability, I think it took my experience changing for it to go from an intellectual understanding to having the problem directly impact me. And that's a little shitty. I'm not proud of it. And it's also worth noting that the work that I've done to learn more about privilege and implicit bias and systemic issues, it's been happening predominantly over the same past few years that my own living situation has shifted a bit, and our economy has shifted a lot of it. So my own perception around money has shifted a bit in the same time frame. So I think it's a little bit perfectionist of me and unfair of me to think that I quote unquote should have shifted my understanding just by learning about other people's lives before it directly impacted me. They happen to occur, if not fully simultaneously, then very, very close to one another. So it didn't. My real aha moment personally has happened over the past, I wrote in my notes, a few years. I think it's really the past year in particular, especially with inflation and my living situation changing. Because right when the pandemic hit, my income plummeted. And I'm going to be really transparent about numbers here. It's not something that I always do, but I do think that it is important in our field, especially when there is a lot of money scarcity and a lot of secrecy around money. When I left my full-time job in 2020, I was making, I believe, just shy of 70K a year. So I went from making just shy of 70,000 a year to in 2022, I believe I made $25,000, like gross income in my business, pre-taxes, pre-business expenses. I do have to sit down and do my final business accounting and budgeting for 2022 still as of this recording, but that's a pretty accurate ballpark. So my income went down by a lot. At the same time that my income plummeted, Justin and I are trying to buy a house in like the second worst housing market in a very long time. Maybe the worst. I don't know how it compares to 2008. But we're also thinking about starting a family. And even with all of the privilege that we still have, right? We still have a lot of privilege. We're living with his parents, so we are saving money with that. His income has been enough to meet our basic needs. So we are very fortunate that we have that. And that has given me the freedom to let my business grow at its own pace and have hard years like this past one, right? And we are fortunate to have family that can help us when things get tight. Right. We even sold our last house last year. So we have a really good down payment between selling the house and what we've been saving living with his parents. Right. We have good credit scores, which is a huge systemic privilege that isn't talked about enough. Like, by all accounts on paper, we're poised to be doing really well. And still, we cannot afford to buy a house within an hour of where Justin works. Period. And we have so many conversations, the two of us, about how the hell is anyone doing this? How is anyone living right now? I've also done a lot of calculations of what my business would need to make in order to like make ends meet with a new mortgage, with the rates and the amount that houses cost in this area, with also potentially raising a family. And it's a lot more than I had anticipated it would be, or that I thought it would need to be when I was young and naive, fresh out of school. So, why am I sharing all of this on my dietitian podcast? Why am I talking to you about my income and my desire to buy a house and all of this stuff? Because that's the other part of capitalism that impacts our relationship with money. Capitalism has no interest in ensuring everyone's basic needs are met, or that we get to a certain place socioeconomically or hit certain benchmarks in life. In fact, the only way capitalism survives is by carrot dangling and stratification. It separates the haves and the have-nots. And it says if you hustle and you work hard enough and you play by my rules, capitalism's rules, you can become someone who has it all. But if you don't, you'll wind up over there with all the poor people. And we have created such derision for poverty. We've deemed it personal failing when in reality, it's the system that allows it to happen and allows it to continue. So our society, I don't know that it creates the caste system. It sure as hell perpetuates it, whatever the accurate terminology is, right? Capitalism doesn't exist if everyone wins. It depends on having quote unquote losers that can be looked down on and judged and loathed and feared and give everyone else the impetus to try to get as far away from that as possible, right? It keeps us hustling to keep us working hard. It keeps us striving for more. And so over time, it gets harder and harder for the average person to meet their basic needs or to hit these benchmarks because capitalism is less a system on how to get rich and more a system on how rich people can stay rich. Again, I'm not an economist. And if I'm losing you, hang in there. But I think sometimes when we have conversations around money and capitalism and the scary S word, socialism, dun, dun, dun. We tend to think in very binary terms. Like, if we don't have capitalism, or if I'm here saying that capitalism isn't perfect, then when we don't have capitalism exactly as it functions right now in today's society, and we give everyone their basic necessities, then we will create a 1984 environment of like grayness and mediocrity and misery and horribleness. Have you ever noticed that? Any like text from the, you know, Red Scare communism 1950s era that talks about anything but capitalism paints it as like this horrible, horrible, terrible, no redeeming quality thing, right? And while it's not in my scope to make comments about what social or economic systems we should or shouldn't implement or which ones will or won't work, like that's clearly not my line of expertise, I do think that it's pretty suspect when we say that one system is like inherently terrible and there's literally nothing beneficial about it, and therefore we have to stick to something that is clearly broken. And I'll say the same thing, like I talk critically of capitalism all the time. Because I'm not an economic financial expert, I'm not sure that it is 100% evil, no redeeming qualities. But I can tell you, it is within my scope to point out how different systems are or are not working for us, how they impact us as dietitians, and what we can do about it and how we can wrap our heads around it. So let's take a step back and go over what we've discussed so far, because I still haven't really drawn the link to dietitians fully yet. We've discussed, or I've been chatting about how capitalism ingrains scarcity into us, right? Which drives this feeling of not enoughness in who we are and what we have and do. And it does this not only through subtle messaging, but also through a very real stratification that makes the things that it defines as enoughness further and further out of reach over time. In short, what is really coming to light, especially over the past year with inflation and the housing market and all of the things becoming super stratified, is that the lifestyle that older generations got accustomed to is by and large not accessible to younger generations. And we are faced, I won't say with only two options, but two big options. We're either trapped in an endless cycle of hustling, trying to find ways to bust our asses and get the lifestyle that we were told we should have in adulthood. And that's a lot of the like, earn six figures, hustle, do this, do that to like make a decent living and have all of the things that you wanted, right? That's a lot of that messaging. Or we are going to have to take a big, brave step back and redefine what enoughness means to us realistically in our lives. And that's what I really want to talk about today. Because up until this point, I have been talking a lot about what society has told us to value. We are told to value ambition and hard work, hustling, productivity, achievement, growth, excellence, wealth, success. Success primarily being defined through wealth, achievement, excellence, productivity. And we are taught that if we aren't growing and improving, we are stagnant, we are falling behind, we are lazy, we are essentially inadequate. Yet, when I work with dietitians on their values, funny enough, these words don't really come up nearly as much. A lot of times they will say something about growth and learning. That is fairly common. And to be clear, I'm not against personal growth. If I was, my supervision would look very different or potentially wouldn't exist at all. I feel like you'd be paying me to be like, ah, fuck it, you're fine how you are. Don't get me wrong. Like, we do a lot of self-acceptance and self-compassion work, but a lot of the work is self-development. It might be a different type of self-development than we're used to hearing. It's not that like toxic bro, not bro marketing, but like the bro messaging of like, you can do it, you're amazing, put your mind to it, go, 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 right? Like, that's not the kind of mindset self-development work I am known for. But it's still self-development. It's self-awareness, and that leads to development. It's fine to want to grow and learn new things. A lot of dietitians value learning and knowledge in particular. It's fine to want to work on yourself or your skills as a dietitian. I would be pretty suspect of a dietitian who felt like they knew everything they needed to know and they had no interest in learning new science or learning new techniques or new perspectives, right? Of course, we want to focus on those things professionally. Those are all valid and wonderful if you personally value them. Right? Again, this isn't binary. So anytime you listen to these podcast episodes, but especially when I'm taking a critical look at some of these like hard-hitting issues, we tend to get trapped in that like all or nothing. And a lot of times I think since we're taught that you're either ambitious or you're lazy, or you're either a go-getter or you're stagnant, we feel like if we aren't hustling, if we aren't achieving all the time, if we aren't praising capitalism, then we're behind or we're a bad person or whatever. But we can value growth and learning and curiosity without those things becoming compulsions or obligations or, like, I don't know, never ending quests. We're also allowed to coast and be and exist and take breaks from constantly trying to be better people and practitioners all the damn time. It's exhausting. So yes, you may value some of those things. Success might show up for you. Learning and growth might show up for you in your core values or things that are important to you. That's okay. And to be honest, sometimes money itself will come up in the values exercises I do, but generally in the form of financial stability. Like, dietitians that I work with don't want to be worried about money. It's less that they want to earn a certain amount or have enough money to XYZ. Generally, it's just, I just don't want to be stressed about money anymore, or I want to be financially stable. And what's more is that as we talk and we dig deeper into their core most values, like the things in their life that are most, most important to them, even if money showed up peripherally on their like initial list, it doesn't make it into their like top five or whatever. Money isn't it. Not even basic financial stability. Like, even when they're like, I just don't want to be stressed about money, that is generally speaking, not one of their top things. Seriously. I've been doing these exercises for a long time and they are fully client-centered, led by the supervisee. I provide very little input in these. Specifically because I don't want to lead them. I don't want to impose my values on them. So I provide very little input, and money is just not important to them. And a lot of times achievement isn't either. Hustle isn't either. I had a dietitian who did one of the activities with me where we talked about priorities in her life, and the things that came up with her were family and traveling and being happy. Her job as a dietitian actually didn't show up once in her top five priorities in life. Now, to be clear, if your job is one of your top priorities, if you do want to climb the ladder and achieve and all of that, and that's totally fine. Money too may be a top priority. Wealth may be a core value for you. I'm not saying it can't, and I'm certainly not saying that if it is, there's something wrong with you. There is no moral value to any core value that we can have. I'm simply here to say that it is far less common than you might think. And yet all of us seem to be making decisions based on society's values instead of our own. For this dietitian that I mentioned, it was a big wake-up call for her to realize that all of her energy and focus had been poured into something that wasn't actually contributing to her happiness or fulfillment in life. It didn't mean that she wanted to quit being a dietitian, but it did mean that she took a job that allowed her to have more time and energy to devote to her life outside of work. She stopped striving for the prestigious promotions that would only lead to more stress just because that was like what she was supposed to do. And she started taking on the positions that were right for her. When I sat down recently to revisit my values and what's important to me in my life, I came back with things like being filled with a sense of peace and fullness, making a home with Justin, feeling a sense of slowness and anti-hustle to my life, and embracing exploration and adventure. Amongst the other dietitians I've worked with, the things that tend to come up a lot are relationships, happiness, time and energy to engage in hobbies and pastimes, not money or wealth or financial security. It is really important to understand when we are making decisions in alignment with our values versus when we are making them in alignment with the values that society ingrains in us. The number one reason dietitians continue to make decisions based on money scarcity, even when they don't hold wealth as a core value, is because they are living out society's values rather than their own. If money isn't a core value for you, let 2023 be the year that you stop letting it dictate every single one of your decisions. I want to help you start making truly aligned decisions that feel abundant and full and vibrant, ones that feel right. There is a calmness that settles in on us, a groundedness when we make an aligned decision versus one driven by anxiety, fear, and scarcity. And that's what we can learn to tune into. And once we know what's important to us, it's time to start envisioning new and creative and progressive ways of realizing them. Maybe enoughness to us doesn't look like it did for our parents or grandparents. Maybe our lives won't look like theirs did at our age. Maybe for me, making a home with Justin isn't going to look exactly like I thought it would when I was in my 20s, envisioning myself settling down with a partner in a house. That doesn't mean that I can't make a home with him. That doesn't mean that I can't value and prioritize and embrace the feelings of peace and groundedness. That I can't prioritize adventure and exploration. Because here's the thing. I am not my parents. I am not my grandparents. And neither are you. And it's about damn time we start living our own lives on our own terms rather than theirs or anyone else's.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Empowering Dietitians podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, there are two things that you can do that dramatically help to support the show. First, leave a quick rating and/or review on your podcast listening app of choice, which really helps new listeners find the show. Second, sharing this episode with a dietitian friend can also go a long way in spreading the anti-hustle message to dietitians far and wide. And speaking of supporting one another, even though I'm on maternity leave right now, that doesn't mean this podcast is your only way of receiving support. On my website, you can find a host of resources, from free workbooks and journals that will opt you into my monthly newsletter support, to a whole library of recorded courses and classes, many of which are approved for CEUs by the CDR. Check out everything I have to offer on my website at www.empoweringdietitians.com.